Welcome to Tully Talk. Talk about Tully all day long. Just kidding. Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I'm Javier.
And Javier had no idea I was starting it by talking about Tully Talk.
Why did you sound like the loud, I forget which one it is from 2.0, the loud one, the like one that has like the box kind of head.
The box head from 2.0?
Yeah, 2.0, the team that used to be on freaking WWE, but then now they're in AEW.
I just like that you call them the box head.
He's with the Jericho Appreciation Society. I don't know.
Look at that blockhead. He's got a blockhead.
It's like Stan Lee, the fucking SpongeBob's cousin.
Oh, we are talking this week. It's Tully Talk. We're talking Tully Blanchard, baby.
Oh, yeah.
We're not talking Tessa. Nope.
Absolutely fucking not. We're not talking about Tessa.
Can't make us. Can't do it. The amount that I quote a Mike Singletary angry interview when he was head coach of the Niners is unhealthy.
You're not even a Niners fan.
No. Can't do it. Can't win with them.
Oh, God. And the funny shit is, he's talking about Vernon Davis.
Yes, he's talking about Vernon Davis.
One of the best tight ends of all time.
All over the map to start this one. Javier, what are your thoughts on Tully Blanchard? What do you know about the man?
I love the Brainbusters. So, like, if that's really where I know Tully from personally. I don't know much about his single stuff. Obviously, I know he was a part of the Horsemen. I haven't done as deep a dive into the Horsemen lore as I probably should have, considering my level of fandom with wrestling history, I guess. But I love the Brainbusters. I've seen like all of their very good matches. Obviously, we've done Arn Anderson on this podcast before, but I can almost certainly guarantee we will have a Tully and Arn tag team episode at some point down the pipeline.
I think at least we're going to have to do just a Horseman episode. Maybe like the best group, because we tried to focus, you'll see in the matches we cover this week, we're trying to focus on Tully's individual career a little bit more. We do have a Brainbusters match, and we've gone through most of the good Brainbusters WWF content because we covered Arn, and they carried Demolition to a good match, and we covered that one.
Ugh.
So we're missing, like, we're kind of hitting the trifecta of their biggest matches in the WWF. Before we get too deep into Tully Talk, let me do all the housekeeping things. One, it's WrestleMania weekend. I hope everyone's having a good, safe, healthy WrestleMania weekend.
I forgot it was WrestleMania weekend.
I was so excited. I was making plans with my boys to watch the Final Four, and I was like, oh, fuck, we have two nights of WrestleMania to watch.
I mean, you can just... I'm telling you right now,
double screens.
WrestleMania Saturday will not be getting touched when Duke UNC is on. As an avid Duke basketball supporter.
Oh, you're a Duke basketball supporter.
I hate UNC with the burning passion of a thousand suns. I've said this on multiple occasions to many people. It goes Yankees, Manchester United, UNC men's basketball.
I didn't know you were so brave to announce on this well-respected podcast that you are a Duke fan.
I am a Duke men's basketball fan. That is it. And I guess the women's team as well, because shout out Kara Lawson.
Take the Grayson Allen poster down from behind you. I never noticed it till now.
You could thank a lot of people for that, actually. But it was more so that, like,
which of the J's in JJ Redick stands for Javier?
Which one? You know, I got Jason Tatum. I got my boy Paolo Banchero.
Paolo.
I love my guys, man.
We don't talk about Paolo.
Funny you should say that. I actually just watched Encanto for the first time.
Very good.
Two nights ago.
Yeah. It's excellent.
Great. Although they chose I don't understand the general populace because the wrong song is the most popular one.
What's the one that should be most popular?
It's one of two. It should be the pressure song.
Pressure. I agree.
It's because in my opinion, that's the best one. Or Dos or Orgullita.
Yes. You're the one who speaks Spanish, man. Don't look at me.
I don't know because it's Caterpillar, but in like a weird, that's not how I know Caterpillar, the word for Caterpillar.
Other housekeeping notes, wherever you're listening, be sure to subscribe if you like content like whatever this has been for the last 4 minutes. Rate 5 stars because we asked you so nicely. Give us a 5-star review, please.
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 If you haven't left already.
Follow us on Twitter @CrossBodyOfWork. Most important follow you'll make all day. check out the merch table. There's probably a lot of merch tables you're going to see if you're at WrestleMania weekend this year. When you come back from WrestleMania, having spent all that money in Dallas, having spent all the money on all those shirts and all those shows, buy one more shirt and make it a shirt from the boys. Fullpressshop.com.
They comfy. I wear them all the time.
They comfy.
The long sleeves I got, for, especially the Blockbuster one, I'd be wearing the Blockbuster one like it's nothing.
Tully Blanchard, son of wrestler and promoter Joe Blanchard. He began selling programs and refreshments at the arenas at the age of 10 and then worked as a referee when he got older. He then went to West Texas State University, where Wikipedia says he played American football, in case you were thinking that he played the other football at West Texas State University. He was a quarterback and then a defensive end. Alongside future wrestlers, he played with two other fellow wrestlers at West Texas State, Tito Santana and Ted DiBiase. What's in the water at West Texas State?
Oh, so Harry Styles just dropped the music video to his new song a day early, and I am going to listen to it as soon as this podcast is over.
My brain is going to explode. The big place for Tully Blanchard before he moved into the world of NWA Jim Crockett Promotions was Southwest Championship Wrestling. He was trained to wrestle by his dad as well as Jose Lothario, and his dad's promotion is Southwest Championship Wrestling. He began his career as a face, tag teaming with his father in a feud against Dory Funk Jr. and Terry Funk. He would hold SCW TV Championship and the Heavyweight Championship, and that's where our first match takes us.
I just love how, like, who the fuck haven't Terry and Dory fought?
I think I'm next.
Like, literally, who haven't they fought? Like, you can, I'm pretty sure fucking Seth Rollins has fought Terry Funk at this point.
Terry Funk is going to be the surprise person.
Book. Who needs fucking Cody or Shane or whoever the fuck it's going to be?
Marco Stunt.
No, his contract's not up yet.
I know, but Seth Rollins tweeted that today, and it made me laugh. He just tweeted a photo of Marco Stunt, I think. Unless I got duped by Twitter.
Oh, you might have. I might have.
So it is SCW, January 31st, 1983. Tully's being interviewed. He said he's proud to be people's champion. Just kidding. He's a heel. He says, people say that they wish their husband could be like him for 10 seconds. The baby face comes out. I have no fucking idea what this man's name is. Did you catch the baby face's name?
Like that he's wrestling?
No, the guy, the promo before. Did you watch the promo before?
The fat dude? I just know him as Beer Belly.
Okay, so Beer Belly comes out. And he says, Tully won the title on January 1st. It's now January 31st. It's been 30 days. You need to defend the title. Tully calls up his boy Lou Thez, you know, the press guy. And he says he found himself a competitor. He goes in the ring and there's a match that's already about to happen. And instead, Tully's like, hey, who wants to wrestle me for the SCW championship? And a guy named Eric Embry agrees. Give me your thoughts on Eric Embry.
Okay, so here's the thing. So you did not set the stage well enough for this match, because Tully just there's about to be a match. It's going to be Eric Embry against this guy called the Grappler, who's just wearing a mask.
Dude grapples.
Wearing a silver mask with silver tights. Yes, I don't know anything more about this. But you just see, he just turns to Eric Embry and just goes, basically you can see him asking, like, do you want a championship match? And Eric Embry's like, hell yeah.
Eric Embry, a red and blue starred singlet that I hate more than I can explain.
But why? Your favorite wrestler wore one of them.
Yeah, but this looks like shit. This looks like one of your first options in like creative wrestler, like the career modes in WWE. It's like, do you want to be are you like an amateur wrestler? It's like, why do I have to look like a clown?
I mean, that's basically what, you know, creative wrestler. That's basically Eric Embry of the 80s. Anyways.
That's fair.
So Tully then turns to the Grappler and is like, yeah, you got to piss off now. And the Grappler's just like,
the fuck out of here. I want to know
what he offered him. Like, did he offer him a title match too later on down the line? Or
you think maybe the Grappler was just a heel and he's like, yeah, cool, whatever.
Think he like paid him off.
Night off.
Maybe paid him off. Gave him like a solid 50 and a pack of Newboros. New Marlboros.
Marlboros or Newports?
I combined the two.
Newboros.
Fucking Newboros, baby.
So, what do you think of the actual match? Let's dive into the content here. The match itself is fine.
Yeah, I mean, come on. It's fucking Tully against some random schlub. You, like, do we really think it was going to be...
And coming out, Emery's coming out, arm drag, Enziguri.
Step up Enziguri in the mid-80s.
Yeah, I was very confused.
Well, the right mid-80s? Where are we here?
Yeah, 1983.
Yeah, it's like close enough.
Yeah.
It's just funny. So we get the step up Enziguri, and then right after that, he hits a drop kick. While Tully's in the corner, and then Monkey flips him, and I was like, "Oh my god!"
Even the Monkey flip in '83, I'm like, "Okay, Embry's got some moves." I'm surprised.
Also, Embry here. Why does he look like a mixture of Dusty Rhodes when he's got the long bleached blonde hair? You know, the Jerry Curl version of Dusty.
Yes.
And Eric Young.
Oh, yeah. I see it. I can see it. Yeah.
He looks like a mixture of that. I saw him and I was like, oh. Because he looks a lot like Eric Young, but he's got Dusty all over him.
Tully manages to get the advantage back. He dodges a second rope springboard by Embry. It wasn't a springboard, sure. Really. It's like it was in the corner.
It was
and
the thing.
He just moves. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Tully decides, fuck this kid.
I'm out.
Takes the knee pad, pulls it down, drops the exposed knee on Embry's face, drops him face first on the turnbuckle, steps on his face. Embry is busted open. And Embry has the like shock of bleach blonde hair. So when he busts open, it is noticeable.
Dude, and then my favorite thing was he also did like a stomp off the middle rope.
Yeah,
like she came through with a stomp, and I was like, "What the fuck?"
For somebody who loves whose finisher would be the top rope chair shot, I assume you love a top rope or a mid rope stomp.
Okay, hey, all I'm saying is, if Seth Rollins set it up for the middle rope, his finisher would be a lot better.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. We got a chin lock by Blanchard. Embry's getting just punched in the fucking face. This poor man.
This guy's getting abused. So Tully hits a scoop slam, then fakes going for a pin.
Yep.
Elbow drop from the middle rope, fake pin again.
Yep.
Tully keeps faking the pin.
Yeah.
He's
fucking with him.
He just like gets down on top of the guy and then immediately picks himself up. He's not even like picking up the kid's head or anything. He's just literally getting up.
Yeah. Pile driver picks him up off the mat.
Brutal pile driver, pulls him up, but this time he pulls him up on the pin, yeah, mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, and then just suplex, but like not really. It kind of looked like a jackhammer.
It had a little oomph to it.
I think it's more like towards the end of the suplex he was getting primed to like just get the cover on.
Yeah.
And but it ended
to,
up
the reason he had to get the cover on is because Beer Belly came back.
Yeah, Beer Belly.
Beer Belly's back, so he does pin him 1, 2, 3. Beer Belly comes in to scare him off, and Tully continues to be a detestable heel champion.
I figured out who Beer Belly is.
Who's Beer Belly?
Have you ever seen The Water Boy?
Yes.
You know the coach that you can't understand? He looks like that, but younger.
Yeah, I got that.
He's the younger version of the unintelligible coach from The Water Boy.
Yeah, I believe
the Adam Sandler special.
That is the Adam Sandler special. Let's move on. So Tully would go to Jim Crockett's Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. He would then...
Wait a minute. More on Jim Crockett later.
More on Jim Crockett later. He entered into a feud immediately over the NWA Television TV Championship with Mark Youngblood. He would win the title and then defend it against some top competitors, including one, Ricky Steamboat at
the other
Starrcade
blood.
1984. Tully would hold the belt for 343 days.
CM That's, Punk?
Guy, same numbers, just you know, wrong order, but yeah. Starrcade 84.
Wow.
Had to watch this on the network.
Unfortunately.
On the cock.
Fucking cock.
I don't know if it's just because it's an old clip and people get distorted, but the ring announcer sounds like Kermit the Frog. And it is distracting. I'm coming down the aisle.
What's the famous Kermit the Frog song?
Oh, there's two.
It's the Rainbow.
Oh, Rainbow Connection.
Is it that?
Yeah. Someday we'll find it. The Rainbow Connection. The lovers, the dreamers, and me. Yeah.
I don't like how well you do that.
I mean, it's like the only time I can really get the Kermit voice down is if I do the song. I also can't do the song in my own voice because I'm instinctively I'm like, Kermit sings this.
Kermit.
Tully is booed every fucking time we see him until our last match here. Tully is a heel through and through. He's a horseman.
Wait, he wasn't a heel in our last match?
I think people were happy. No, like the last match of the bunch.
Oh, like through the last match.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. No. Tully's a heel this whole episode.
I think the last one, they're just happy to see him for the first time in a while, but then they're like, you're still a heel.
He's not the baby face in that match. No, I can tell you that much.
Blanchard with a flurry to start. Steamboat just trades with him. Blanchard's down first after some right hands.
Homie, the fist drop.
Yes.
The extra as hell fist drop from Ricky Steamboat.
Speaking of extra as hell, the way that Starrcade is lit is beautiful. The spotlight on the ring, you see nothing in the crowd. It's just what's happening in the ring. Gives it that big match feel. I like that.
You know, I have another note on this Starrcade, just the production.
Okay.
I love the camera work.
Yeah?
The camera, because it's like angles that we're not used to seeing, because we're so used to like the regular wrestling angles of today, where it's like WCW, WWE, and AEW. They all kind of follow a similar style.
Yeah.
This is like different angles. It's like from the corner, that's where the hard cam is, and like they've got the ring side, like they right on the apron, basically, but not like top rope looking into the ring. It's like middle rope looking into the ring.
You know what it reminds me of is like anytime you watch wrestling portrayed in TV shows, they do like the more fun angles, like Glow would do fun stuff with the camera angles. It's like that's kind of what they went with here.
Yeah, like let me get more of that.
Also, before we actually talk about the match, Ricky Steamboat is jacked as hell in this
match. Holy shit, dude, his chest meat.
Ricky Steamboat looking like Big Rick.
That man's fucking chest is defined.
Ricky Dreamboat, more like. Let's go.
Dick blood getting rushing some blood to my.
Oh, sir. This is a family podcast. Oh, sir. You can't say that on television. All right. Let's see. Suplex from the apron into the ring by Steamboat. Like that spot a lot.
Yes, I love when that spot is in like older matches.
Mm-hmm, because it feels so modern, you know what I mean?
Yes, it feels so, and also like, you also like take it into the context of the time and like, you know, like, oh, that's a big move right there.
Yeah, that's big. Tully gets the advantage again, focusing on the ribs of Steamboat. He hits like a side breaker with the knee.
Yeah.
Tully runs him in the corner. We get like a jump up axe kick by Steamboat to get space in the corner. I was like, okay.
I didn't really know, like, Steamboat's offense here was just vibes. I didn't really know what the fuck to call it. He was just doing shit.
Steamboat with the let's just see what I've got in my bag.
Yeah, basically my man was in the bag and he was like, you know, I could take a lot of the stuff that's here invisible on the surface, but what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna reach all the way in there.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna pull out some random shit. Yeah.
In the magic bag. He puts on a rear chin lock. Tully's way of getting out of the rear chin lock is to rumble eliminate himself and just like launch himself over the top rope to get free. And it works, which I don't fully understand how it worked. He just like moved himself over the top rope and then was like, all right, I'm good. Yeah, no, I'm fine. And then he just kicks here from the apron, you know, backdrop. It's nice.
Nice little whatever. Tully's selling from here on out, fantastic.
Oh,
from this match onward, incredible. That is the one thing I took away from this episode more than anything. Tully Blanchard is a fucking all-time seller.
If we had Twitter in the 80s, Tully, I think, would have been one of those guys. People are like, when's the Tully push coming? Like, we got to put the belt on Tully. Like, I think it would have been people like Tully and Arn. It would have been the Tully and Arn. People are like, we got to use Tully and Arn more. Like, they're so good.
I can believe that for Arn. Mm-hmm. But Tully, I'm looking at Tully and I'm like, there's no fucking way this dude should have ever been the world champion. You just can't look like that and be a world champion. My man is like 5'10", barrel chested. It's not a good look if that's your world champion, you know?
Tully does look like he is the dad that could beat up other dads, though. Like, other dads come up. If they fuck with his barbecue at the cookout, yeah. Tully's gonna show him what's up in Skechers.
I hate to mention her, but the reason Tessa Blanchard actually won the Impact World Championship was because Tully showed up backstage and was like, hey, I think it'd be a good idea. Come on, pal.
I think it would be good for you and for us.
Put the hand, the back of the hand right on the shoulder like this. Right? Mm. You know?
Yeah.
Basically like Bane in the Dark Knight Rises. Does it feel like you have the power?
Do you feel like you have the power? Burn in the dark. All right. There's been a lot of impressions this week. Buddy. I'm going to go blow up Heinz Field. All right. there's this weird bit in the middle where they're just walking around and, quote, sizing each other up for what feels like forever.
Ages they're doing that. And then Tully starts doing, like, the Ollie shuffle and shit.
Steamboat whips him into the rope, jumps over Blanchard twice, hits the power slam. Steamboat has all the momentum. Tully kicks out. Swings at Steamboat as he's kicking out. Like, he kicks out and then from the ground swings at Steamboat, and Steamboat just backs up. He's like, whoa, this is where you're right. The vibes are immaculate from Steamboat. Just, hey.
Hey, man. Hey. Not what are we cool. doing here? He's like the, you know how sometimes in romance, I guess, rom-coms or whatever, like a more so comedy than anything, there's always like the couple splits and then they see each other and the girl like finds like a weird lover. Like he's like the most interesting person, or he's like, you know, like, I just found him in like fucking Hawaii, you know, that's where he's from, and he's like the coolest person ever. So
How I Met Your Mother, Ted and Robin split. Robin comes home with Gael.
Yes,
there you go. Okay.
Like fucking Argentina. Like, Steamboat is the guy. He is
Steamboat
one of the.
Is Gael.
Steamboat is a Gael, you know?
I'm sorry, did you say Gael? So we get the swinging neck breaker by Steamboat, a rope assisted suplex for a two by Steamboat, which apparently is a Tully move. They say it's a Tully move.
Tully's busted open by this point, by the way.
Yes, Tully's bleeding. They say it's a Tully move. In the five matches we watched, Tully does not do it ever.
Yeah, I'd never even heard of that being a Tully move.
Tully is on the ropes, busted open, and he's got something in his hand. He misses with a swing. Steamboat wants to do a back suplex to him. While he's in the back suplex position, Blanchard hits him on the way down with whatever was in his hand. Then hits what I'm going to politely call a running crossbody, but was actually just a attack at that. He just jumped at Steamboat.
I'm telling you, vibes.
Yeah. Vibes. Tully's like, I also can do my moves by vibes. That's it. Then we're kind of going to the finish. I'll let you go into the finish.
Yeah. So Tully's out in the apron, like you mentioned. But so in that spot, actually, that you mentioned, he had the item.
Yes. He has the item in his hand. Yeah.
Punch. Then he turns over into the situation there. And then at one point here, so Steamboat's trying to do like a leverage pin. He's underneath. It's basically trying to get like a sunset flip pin in, mm-hmm. kind of. But Tully's not falling. And then Tully opens up his tights. Goes digging for some gold right into the junkular area.
He's in the junkyard.
He's in the junkyard, baby. And what's he pulling out? He's pulling out some scrap metal. And when he pulled out the scrap metal, punches Steamboat right in the dome, quickly opens up his trunks again, throws the thing right in there, goes into the pin. Referee, by the way, is maybe a foot away.
Just oblivious to this.
Maybe a foot away. By the way, you would think, oh, the ref's probably on the other side. That's where the that's why the ref couldn't catch any of this. No, the ref is literally, his face is about 6 inches away from Steamboat's face.
But he misses it.
Misses it completely. Maybe he was mesmerized by the fact that Tully reached into his junk. I think that's what it was.
He was distracted by how jacked Ricky Steamboat looked. But Tully wins, retains the TV championship in a big Starrcade match. We're going to take our first break. When we get back, we're looking at Starrcade 1 year later and our first ever look on this podcast at Magnum TA. Back from the break into Starrcade 85. This time, Tully is the United States champion for the NWA. He had won it from Magnum TA at a house show, and they're fighting once again. Starrcade 85, like I said, a steel cage I quit match. Tully versus Magnum TA. Magnum TA, a known name in the wrestling universe for being like the hot up-and-comer, and then tragedy befelling him. He looks like a million bucks in this match.
Yeah.
The look, I understand the hype. I
obviously fully, you know, rip off of, what is it, Magnum PA?
Magnum PI.
Magnum PI, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Selleck? Is that Tom Selleck?
That is Tom Selleck.
Oh, look at me. I know my shit.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, Magnum TA is still with us at the time of recording. He had a car accident that caused him to be unable to wrestle anymore. This was in 1986. So this is just, let's see, a little over a year or a little less than a year away from the tragic accident.
Yeah. The tragedy was the end of his career. Fortunately, not the end of his life. And yeah, I mean, listen, we'll get more of that in, when we get to Magnum TA's episode. But
which we're definitely going
to
do.
Oh, absolutely. The man was one of the biggest stars of the 80s. We have to. I like to think that the first portion of this podcast, up until the first break, was the junk part of this podcast. Because there was a lot of junk talk. This is the ass portion of this podcast. Because this match is ass.
This match is heated. Heated as hell. The storyline's there. Tully's got an arm piece now because he's got Baby Doll at his side.
Baby Doll, baby.
They've got just so much heat in this. But in terms of in-ring quality, this is the stuff that people point to in the 80s be like, it was all about, again, it was all about storylines and characters because the match itself is bad.
It
I
want to
talk
shit.
About Starrcade 85 for a second, too. Starrcade 85 was split. It was half and half. The Greensboro Coliseum and the other half is at the Omni in Atlanta. I'm glad we stopped doing this. Nobody's doing this anymore.
Except for
when they did, what was that, Raw 25? And they had the Manhattan Center?
Yeah, but that sucked.
Yeah, you're right. It did suck. Stop splitting shows. It makes no fucking sense.
It's just, it sucks. It all sucks. It's stupid. Life is stupid. Existence is futile.
Okay, Magnum TI, like I said, great blonde mullet, he's here, and they start with some Greco-Roman knuckle lock grappling, baby!
Except they're just, like, rolling around on the floor.
Yeah, that's what
I don't understand, like, it's, they're rolling around on the floor doing the Greco-Roman knuckle locks. Like, you guys are just exaggerating holding hands at this point.
I'm gonna spoil the whole middle of this match. Ready? They punch each other and ask each other to quit.
With a very tiny microphone. It is comically tiny.
Hey, did we get the regular microphone for the show? Yeah, I think so. We sent Tiny Bobby out to go get it. Yeah, it looks great. Could barely pick it up.
Yeah, we sent Marco Stunt to go get it.
He's going to be rebranded in WWE as Tiny Bobby. You didn't know that?
Oh, is that what it's going to be? Yeah, I thought it was a...
How much money would they need to pay Vince to sign Marco Stunt?
I'm telling you right now, Marco Stunt might make more than Brock Lesnar.
Like I said, the whole middle is just them punching each other and asking to quit. Tully tosses Magnum into the side of the cage wall. Tully's busted open real early. Magnum's busted open real early.
Yeah.
Magnum then gets the advantage, drops Tully throat first on the ropes, a little stun gun action.
A little stun gun, baby.
then runs him into the cage. So Tully's busted open, and they're just then beat punching each other and asking each other to quit. That's it.
I will
That's
say
the whole vibe.
The way that Tully's selling the punches is fantastic.
Okay, yeah.
Tully's selling was the highlight of this match.
My favorite part in the middle was when Tully is climbing the ropes and then walks the top rope and then realizes he doesn't do this. And so he only does two steps and then drops an axe handle on a kneeling Magnum. He's like, whoa, this isn't me.
Yeah, he said, fuck that.
I don't do this.
And so my... I had three consecutive notes where we just interchanged the person. So the first one is Tully just beating this dude and forcing the mic in his face. Magnum's beating this dude and forcing the mic in his face. Tully's beating this dude and forcing the mic in his face. I didn't even notice that.
They're on their knees trading shots, and then we get a move I don't think I've ever seen before. A super atomic drop.
Oh my god.
Innovators.
Dude, this is insane. This might be my new finisher.
The super atomic drop.
Dude, you know how effective that would be? You're getting your taint kneed from the top rope.
Look, that's essentially what it is. You've seen taints kneed before, but have you seen taints kneed from high places?
It's an avalanche. Atomic drop, baby. That's gonna be the new fan. No, I can't change the chair. Shut up.
Hey, man, what's your finish? I wanna know what it is. Oh, we're gonna do a top rope taint knee.
Wouldn't it be a knee taint?
Knee taint. Yeah.
Anyways, I just need to say that logistically, that sounds like a nightmare and torn ACL waiting to happen.
Yes, it absolutely does. Tully, we're gonna go near the finish now. Tully tosses the ref for some reason in a match that has no disqualifications.
My man just randomly kicks the ref.
He kicks him. He tosses him. Just elbow randomly. To Magnum. And then a wooden lawn chair is thrown into the ring. Like old like basement of a church there for the AA meetings chair is thrown into the ring.
Just a chair that you look at and you're like, I literally weigh like 150 pounds. And that would not support me.
If the termites leave the chair will disappear. All right? And Tully, instead of hitting Magnum with it, breaks the chair in the middle of the ring. Because he has a fire to build and not a lot of time. He then kicks the ref again. Because fuck that guy.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
The reason being, he thinks that Magnum's a vampire. And wants to stab him with a stake in the forehead. Blah! Magnum fights back, gets his own piece of chair, and says, hey, Tully, love the brainstorm that you did earlier. Really like what you're working on. I'm going to just carry this over the goal line for you. And jams a piece of wood into Tully's forehead.
A bigger piece of wood.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, always bigger, always better.
Yes, absolutely.
This Even is very students. Hardcore for 85, by the way. This is nuts.
Sure.
He's like, hey, get stabbed. What is this, a New Jack match? It's nuts.
What is this, Paul Pierce in the club? Baby doll is so worried about Tully.
Somewhere a young Jesus is watching being like, I'm going to do that to John Cena.
I am going to kill that child. If I could go back in time, that is what I'm stopping. I'm preventing the birth of Jesus.
Tully says I quit because he's being stabbed. What a loser. Really doesn't like his U.S. title, I guess. Magnum T.I. wins the U.S. championship. Good for him. It is hard. I get the concept of I quit matches. Never, ever, ever bet on the heel in an I quit match. Because it's just not going to happen. The babyface isn't going to say, I quit.
Unless the heel is JBL and he's going up against John Cena. Or Randy Orton and he's going up against John Cena.
But the thing is, like, the heel... The
or
heel
Wade Barrett always, and he's going up against John Cena.
Why does John Cena have so many I quit matches? Because he doesn't quit. Hustle, loyalty,
or
respect.
He's Rusev and he's going up against John Cena.
That man loves I quit matches. Let's dive into the promo. This promo was titled... another check to cancel, and I already know that you love this promo.
Let me tell you something. We're bringing back Jim Crockett, baby. This time it's Jim Crockett Jr.
Yeah.
By the way, first note. Oh, hey, Tony.
Tony Schiavone is here with a mullet and a mustache. Right, everything's right in the world.
Looks great, by the way. Great looks look, great. For man.
I mean, he's like, got to be what, in his 20s?
Honestly, doesn't look that much different nowadays.
He really doesn't. he looks almost exactly. He just makes disgusted faces at people on AEW TV.
Yeah, I mean, hey, he's obviously like, he looks older because he is, and he looks a little out of shape because he is, and that's okay because he's older.
You can't like beat 70, Father Time. Undefeated.
How old is Tony? Tony's old.
How? I feel like we've done this on the podcast before where we're like, how old is Tony Schiavone?
Tony's like in his late 60s, I would guess.
Let's see. Tony Schiavone is...
I guess he's late
5'10". Thank you, Wikipedia. No, he's 64.
Ah, close enough.
Yeah.
Close enough.
First thing that shows up, Tony Schiavone height. Like, I don't fucking care. What are we brawling Tony right now?
No, he's the same height as Adam Cole.
any non-wrestling commentator, like non-wrestler, non-former wrestler, they're in a battle royal, who comes out on top? All time.
Oh,
but
all
non-wrestlers,
time.
Non-wrestlers.
So Bobby Heenan doesn't count then.
No, Bobby Heenan doesn't count. Gorilla doesn't count.
No, Pat.
Booker no doesn't count. It's like Cole, Phillips, Schiavone.
JR. I'm going to go Phillips because he looks like he's probably the most in shape.
Oh, right. Byron Saxton was a wrestler. I was like, Byron. No, Byron was a real wrestler.
Yeah, he's a wrestler. He's on NXT.
Yeah. Yeah.
The reality show, not the good one.
Not the happiness, not the dopamine producer. Tully is here and he is yelling about Ricky Morton. I didn't catch most of it. He's just mad at Ricky Morton.
Hey, he calls himself the ultimate wrestler and he says Ricky Morton could wrestle him anytime, any place.
Jim Crockett Jr. shows up.
And no, before that.
Oh, what do you got? What do you got before
he's
that?
He's talking shit about Jim Crockett before Jim Crockett shows up.
Yeah.
And he goes, what do you have? Another check to cancel or something?
Yeah, what do you have? Another check to cancel? It's great. But Jim Crockett's here to tell him that he's going to be in a match with Ricky Morton. Very exciting. Mm. But the match is a lumberjack match where the lumberjacks will have belts. I'm sure that made much more sense in context, you know? But for us, it's like, why do they got belts? What belts got to do with this? All I know is that Arn Anderson is livid about belts.
I love Arn.
Arn's beside himself about the belts.
Oh, this is fucking hilarious. By the way, when Tully finally gets the microphone, he's calmed down a little bit. He's not reacting anymore. He goes, Mr. Crockett, cancel checks. Dusty Rhodes, money above. And then I don't know what the fuck he says after that because the crowd's being so fucking loud. But then he says that the two of them, him and Arn, he says that Crockett and Dusty Rhodes are trying to take down the Horsemen.
Yeah.
Says that it doesn't matter because at the end he's gonna tell. He says, "Lumberjacks, bring the belts. Bring the lumberjacks. Bring anything you need because he's gonna whip Ricky, and then the championships, the tag team championships, are gonna be his and Arn's."
He also says, "Mr. Crockett, you be one of the lumberjacks," which like love to see that.
That would be
would love for them to book a lumberjack match and then like AEW books it and then Tony Khan's just at ringside.
Let me tell you something. The only person that looks like less of a wrestler than Jim Crockett Jr. did in this promo is Tony Khan.
You are correct.
70-odd-year-old Vince McMahon looks like more of a wrestler than Tony Khan.
That's because Vince McMahon, even at 70, is more of a man than most people I've ever met. He's terrifying. He's an idiot, but he's terrifying.
Like, has anyone ever? I'm sorry. We're off the rails at this point with this podcast.
We have been off the rails for 40 minutes. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, we have a junk section and ass section. I don't even know what to call the last one. This Tony Khan. Has anyone ever intimidated you less than Tony Khan? I look at Tony and I'm like, this man does not scare me at all.
I saw a puppy at the park the other day.
No, more scared of the dog. More scared of the dog.
That's true. Dogs bite.
Yeah, so yeah, especially if it's a puppy, it might be teething.
This puppy's teething. It's off its leash.
He's grown crazy.
It's already more scary than Tony Khan, I'll tell you that much. And I love Tony Khan. He's doing a great job. But that man
gives us content.
I'm telling you right now, the whole thing of my dad could beat your dad, if he ever has a child, his child could never say that.
My dad can buy your dad.
That's it. That's all he could say.
Arn is also out there for the promo, like we said. And he ends it with a great line.
Go on.
It's been your pleasure, as usual, and leaves. I'm like, fuck yeah. It has been our pleasure. You're right.
Yeah, like, I'm at fucking Chick-fil-A. It's my pleasure.
We're going to take a break, get our Chick-fil-A, and we're back. Oh. We're in WWF. Back from the break, after clashing with Mr. Jim Crockett, not just in promo, but in real life, and Booker Dusty Rhodes about their pay, Tully and Arn left the NWA for the WWF on September 10th, 1988. They would join WWF and be a very successful tag team. We're looking at their one and only, I believe, WrestleMania match. And that is WrestleMania 5, Brainbusters versus Strikeforce.
I love Strikeforce.
I love Arn Anderson, so this is a win-win for both of us.
I like how I point out that I love Strikeforce. You point out that you love Arn. This episode is literally on Tully.
We do this all the time, though. We're like, this episode's about this person. Isn't that person great? That person over there.
I love Strikeforce. I mean, Strikeforce is awesome. It's Rick Martel and Tito Santana, and they are fantastic.
Tully starts the match against Martel. He's firing up in the corner against both Brainbusters. Martel's good work. Good work early.
Rick Martel is fantastic.
We get double drop kicks by Martel and Santana. Kick the bad guys to the outside. I like this. This is good.
It's good shit.
This match, though, is a masterclass in whenever people are like, oh, you know, FDR tries to invoke the Brainbusters or any young team now or any team now that's like a heel, like a methodical heel. Like they're trying to be like the Brainbusters. This is the shit they're talking about.
Yeah.
This is okay, the clinic.
So Tito's in the ring. He gets a backslide on Tully. Arn makes the save. Tito gets a small package in, but the ref is distracted by Arn. We get a ghost tag by Strikeforce. Tito accidentally. So he goes for a shoulder tackle on Tully. Tully gets out of the way. On the other side of Tully is Rick Martel. So Tito accidentally goes right into Rick Martel. The heels have the advantage.
Tully is responsible for a very major shift in the WWF landscape. You go, Tully. Well done.
Major?
I'd say it was major. I'd say it was big.
In the tag division, sure. In the tag
division. Yeah. But we'll talk about it in a second.
So Tito gets a leverage pin. Arn tags in Tully.
Yeah.
Heenan on commentary is the best. Just the fucking best. I enjoyed Heenan this entire fucking match. Tito like gets pushed off the middle rope and Heenan says that he fell.
Good heel stuff.
Such good shit.
The Brainbusters, this is where the isolating starts. They're isolating Tito. They're always able to get the tag, keep it fresh. Arn goes up top. Tito catches him and dumps him off the top rope. And that was my thought too. I was like, Arn, why are you there? You don't live there. You live on the ground.
Arn is the least athletic looking man I have ever seen. Like, I'm telling you right now, I take one look at Arn Anderson. I'm pretty sure he could bench press 1,000 pounds, but that man can jump about 10 inches.
Yeah, he would not have a very complete, like, combine.
Yeah, no, his combine would be atrocious.
You did what in the shuttle cone? That's terrible. Oh, you did 86 reps on the bench press?
Ooh. You had an 8-second 40 time? What, did you walk it?
I remember in senior year of high school, my teacher, it was like around combine season. He was like, you guys have probably heard about 40 times, right? He's like, you guys want to find out your 40 times? Because we're all like, yeah, we're fast. Oh my God, none of us are fast.
Do you want to hear my pre-ankle injury 40 time? Unofficial.
Hey, give me the unofficial 40.
4.52.
Ooh, this boy is fast.
This boy is fast, boy.
Yeah, I was a linebacker and not a rush linebacker, so no.
And I wasn't like a stop-start type of person because I played soccer and basketball. So I didn't actually know how to do like the starts or whatever. So I made up all my speed at the end.
I figured it out as I went.
Yeah. First second was wasted.
So Santana has an opening now. He's dumped Arn off the top rope. He's going to go and tag Martel, but Martel doesn't extend the arm.
Yeah, instead he walks along the apron and then he's just like, well, fuck this guy.
Yeah. He hit me earlier. I'm out of this. I hate Strike Force. We have seen the destruction of Strike Force. This sounds like the opening of like a fucking MCU show. Strike Force is disbanded.
I have to watch Moon Knight.
I also have to watch Moon Knight. Probably going to do it after we record.
Yeah, I'm going to do that after we record. Actually, no, let's just do it right now. Here, I'll get it booted up.
quick pause. We got to watch Moon Knight.
Yeah, we'll do that right now. We'll get right back to the podcast.
So now in this impromptu handicap match, Tully hits Nalvo to Santana.
Tito's in the mud.
He is, especially after an Arn spine buster. I swear to God, he hit it and the clouds parted outside my window. I heard birds chirp. Spring has sprung in Canada. All because Arn hit a spine buster.
You know, Arn hit the spine buster, and for some reason, What a Wonderful Life just started playing.
Yeah, I got taller. I don't know how.
Why'd you do that? You know, I think all of my depression went away.
It just went away.
It's crazy.
Tully is straight up strutting in the ring. He does not give a shit. It's a 2-on-1. He knows. He knows they've got it. He's just like dancing in the ring. He's
having a good time. And then Tito fires up.
I like this. Tito goes for a monkey flip out of the corner, but Arn holds Tully back so that he won't go with him. So Tito just like he's diving backwards into a pool.
Yeah.
Just whoop.
But he can't get the rotation now.
Yeah. So
just... Oh man.
The finishing move too is tremendous. Go into the finish.
Yeah, so ultimately the numbers advantage is too much. Arn gets back in the ring. Flips my man upside down in the pile driver position. Tully comes off the top rope. We get a mind eraser, which is a fantastic finisher, by the way.
For those who don't know, assisted spike pile driver.
Yeah, one that should be used by a team that obviously is safe enough to use it.
Yeah, I mean, FTR was right there.
Well,
they have enough of their own stuff.
I love the Shatter Machine. It's such a great finisher. We cannot get rid of that. Brainbusters win.
Around November 1989, about a year after they joined the company, Blanchard failed a drug test, testing positive for cocaine. I know it's the 80s, but you can't do that. He would leave WWF, and it would be that he would have an offer withdrawal from NWA.
Oh,
kind of started like not an early retirement, but he was just then doing paid for appearances. In 93, WCW offered Blanchard $500 an appearance to reform the Four Horsemen at Slamboree 93. Blanchard did not accept the offer, considering it to be too low, so WCW replaced him with Paul Roma. 1 year later, at Slamboree 1994, Tully Blanchard returned to WCW for the most random fucking match you could imagine. And of course, we had to add it. It's his first match, really, for a major promotion since 89. Slamboree 1994 versus Terry Funk, who was on loan from ECW. They did a talent exchange. The trade was, here's my inner Shams, ready? The trade details are as reported. Terry Funk goes from ECW to WCW for a show. In return, ECW receives Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton. Who wins? The better of that deal?
Repeat? What the fuck was the trade?
Terry Funk went from ECW to WCW for a night. In return, ECW got Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton for a night.
Oh, for a night. Okay. All right. Well, I would say.
Imagine if there was trades. Imagine if fucking, I don't know, who's a insider who's actually cool wrestling? None of us. We're all. Is Wade Keller, is he the only like normal one?
Yeah. He's,
yeah. Wade Keller.
He's kind of an asshole, but he's normal.
I always watch Sean Ross Sapp. I see his stuff all the time. Anyways, one of them. Cultaholic. I like those boys. They're nice.
From the Matt Man podcast.
Yeah. They break the news that there's a trade between WWE and AEW. I'd lose my mind. I don't care who it is.
I mean, shit, if the contracts match up, why not?
Why not?
We can make this happen, baby.
You both have unlimited cap, except for your own greed.
Exactly. Why not? And then we get an off-the-cuff trade. It's like Impact is sending Sid. We get a three-team deal.
Impact just gets draft picks.
No impact.
Like, yeah, for what draft? They're like, I don't know. Whenever you guys do your draft, we get one.
Impact's just like, can we get cash considerations?
Impact gets Veer.
Oh, baby.
He's coming. Apparently.
Yeah, coming Monday.
Monday.
Raw after Mania.
It's going to be called Veer Day from now on.
Monday Night Veer, baby.
Monday Night Veer. All right. This match, Slamboree 94, Terry Funk. Gordon Solie is on commentary with Bobby Heenan. I was like, what year is this? Like, I know it's 94, but Gordon Solie to me
Gordon,
is like...
It's Gordon Solie. He was the voice of WCW.
I know, but to me, that just feels like so much older than 94.
I didn't actually do... I kind of like the pairing of Gordon and Bobby.
It was a good pair. It was a good pair. But then again, Bobby Heenan could do commentary with an old shoe, and it would be good.
You know, there probably are some shows out there that has Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to find them.
And I'd like those if they don't also have Dusty on commentary, baby.
Well, no, if Dusty's on there, it's even better.
Sometimes, baby, but sometimes Dusty gets directly better. Baby, there's so many impressions in this episode.
Baby, I need to see Dusty Road, baby.
Oh, what happens next? Oh!
Who invited this square to the party?
I feel like I shouldn't do Disney voices, but then I also know that like every podcast eventually is going to be bought by Disney anyway, so like I'm not ready. They own everything else.
Yeah, screw Michael Mouse.
What's up, Mike Mouse?
Double M, baby.
Call all Mikes, all Mickey's Mikes, and call all Mike's Mickey's. And all Michael's Mickey's.
I've been
famous basketball player Mickey Jordan. All right.
I'm the Mickey Jordan of the mic recording.
Terry. So it's great. It's a weird thing.
Tully's in a robe.
Tully's in a robe. It's weird already. It's very, very strange vibes. Terry and Tully don't even wait for the match to start. They just attack each other at ringside.
Yeah, they're fucking ringside, just throwing hands. Literally throwing hands. They are quite literally swinging on each other.
Terry, at one point, grabs someone's crutches and tries to throw them in the ring.
Wait, that was Terry that did that? That's someone just randomly threw their crutches in the ring.
Terry grabs crutches from somebody at ringside and is like, I could use these later.
Oh, is this after the fucking suplex?
Yeah, this is after the suplex, yes.
Beautiful suplex from Tully.
Yes, very much so. But then he just whips these fucking crutches into the ring. Someone's going to need these.
So Funk does an extra as hell atomic drop on Tully, and Tully goes flying into the guardrail selling.
Don't get me wrong, though. It's no second rope super atomic drop. It's no super taint knee.
Yeah, listen, I don't know. Who in wrestling has fake knees? Does anybody have like a replacement knee or something? Undertaker does.
I mean, I guess.
If The Undertaker ever comes back, his replacement, he's got to do the atomic drop as a finish. That freaking metallic drop of the taint. Oh.
Undertaker comes back. First match in forever. Huge match. I don't know who against. Some
fucking Darby Allin.
So, yeah, it's in AEW. It's fucking crazy.
He's Mark Calloway.
And he's setting up, and it looks like, oh, what's he going to hit him with? Is it the choke slam? Is it the last ride? And then he knees him in the taint and wins. I'd cry actual tears.
Homie, I would be in stunned belief worse than WrestleMania 30.
Is the atomic drop our favorite move now?
It might be.
It might be.
I have a whole new perspective for it.
Terry knocks Tully off the raised rampway. Which is a shame. Nick Patrick tries to stop Terry, who takes some paneling off of the ramp and smacks him with it. He's like, hey, this is a weapon. Terry's been in ECW for so long that he doesn't know how to switch off. So he's like, oh, it's by the way, this is not a no DQ match.
It gets even better. Because he uses the same little thing. It's like literally like the same size of like a TV dinner tray.
Yes.
And he just sets it up on the bottom rope, leading up against the bottom rope. It sets up perfectly, like a table in a corner. But he sets it up in the bottom rope. And then does a pile driver on it.
And then he follows it up with a DDT on the ramp. A headbutt by Terry. Terry Funk is out of his mind.
I don't even know what's going on. So after the DDT, Nick Patrick, because he's a fucking square loser, goes... I'm starting the double count.
Nerd.
Fuck you, guy.
We get another Terry pile driver. And then, because as we mentioned a couple times, Terry is out of his mind. He decides the next thing that makes sense for me to do, moonsault. Tully moves out of the way because the moonsault is like molasses.
This is the single ugliest moonsault I have ever seen in my life. By the way, I don't know if you've realized this or not. Terry Funk is getting a three-parter.
I'm not like emotionally capable of that.
Because I don't know if you know this or not, but Terry Funk wrestled for like 50 years. Cannot condense that into one episode.
I think if somebody went back and like, I think Terry Funk has come up. This is probably the third time he's come up on the podcast in an episode, maybe the fourth. Every single time we watch a Terry Funk match, we laugh hysterically because we can't understand what the fuck is going on without fail. If we do 3 weeks of Terry Funk, we're going to like bust actual guts laughing.
This podcast is going to go in shambles. But here's the thing. We have to.
We have to at some point.
Because he's been everywhere and in every bitch.
He's been everywhere. We get a ref bump on a reversed Irish whip, which actually, since Nick Patrick was being such a nerd, I believe it was on purpose. They're like, let me whip you into Nick. He deserves it, right?
And then Terry immediately goes and grabs a chair.
Funker with the chair. What's Funker do with the chair?
He tries to do a top rope pile driver.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that shit was botched or not. I don't know what the hell happened on this.
I know he botched it and then falls, and Terry lands perfectly seated on the chair. He's
perfectly sitting on the chair, and fucking Tully is just like, eh. Tully just flopped onto the crowd.
The next big thing to happen after, you know, Terry's sitting in the corner thinking about what he did, Tully kicks Nick Patrick. Because that seemed like the right thing to do. He just kicks him.
I just want to reiterate, this is not a no DQ match.
So he kicks the ref, and then Terry hits him with the branding iron.
Which, by the way, where the fuck did Terry Funk get a branding iron?
I think Terry Funk never is without a branding iron. What if he finds cattle that are now his? What would he do in that situation?
What if someone's like, hey, I want a tattoo, and Terry Funk's just like, how about a brand?
And it would just be a TF, because honestly, the fact that his initials are TF is perfect, because the fuck is going on? Every time we cover Funker, as you can imagine, from the amount of things we told you that are disqualifiable offenses, this goes to a double DQ.
And the funniest shit is, the only reason it went to a double DQ was because Terry Funk takes the branding iron and literally wraps it around Tully's head. He bends it so hard.
Did you stay around to see what happens after the double DQ?
Dude. Okay, yes, I did. So there's a random member in the audience who has, what type of hat would you call that?
Oh, that's Hat Guy. ECW Hat Guy.
Oh!
That's Hat Guy. This show was in Philadelphia, so this is Hat Guy from ECW.
I didn't know that was Hat Guy. Well, he takes...
His name is John Bailey, if you're curious. I just Googled it.
Why the fuck does Hat Guy have a name?
Well, because this is my baby boy, his name's Hat Guy. The fuck you think? Of course he's got a name.
If you choose to name yourself Hat Guy, you're just Hat Guy. I don't know.
So Hat Guy was there since it was in Philly. And Terry Funk gets the hat and elbow drops the hat and
like eats the hat. Like he's fucking Ric Flair. And the No. Here's the funniest shit about it. So he drops the elbow on the hat.
Yep.
And follows it up by doing the Rick Steiner, like, dog fucking headbutt thing that he used to do.
Yep.
To the hat.
To the hat.
What
this
the
was. This was Tully's, like, last big thing in WCW.
Oh, but Tully gets busted for cocaine.
In January 95, Tully would be at ECW for a little bit. He would wrestle Shane Douglas to a time limit draw and then lose to him again. A couple other random spots where he went to. He was in the NWA a little bit. Would wrestle in Wrestle Reunion, House of Heroes Wrestling pay-per-view. And then where we've seen him most recently, AEW. Tully was in AEW. Yeah. He was with Sean Spears as the exclusive advisor. Then he was with FTR. Now, a mystery where Tully will be.
Yeah, I have no idea who Tully. I mean, I saw some rumor that he was going to maybe be paired with another. I don't know if it was person or team. I don't remember who it was.
Okay.
I really don't. But it does seem like Tully Blanchard is not done in a managerial capacity.
That's
but
fair.
Honestly, I just got to say, Tully as the manager of FTR, did it really do anything for them?
I think in terms of styles, if you are familiar with Tully's work, fits.
The thing is, though, like, I don't...
But that's the thing, is I think it appeals to a certain demographic who are the older fans to, like, hey, you know Tully? These guys.
I'm sure the pair of them were so happy to be with Tully Blanchard.
And I'm sure they learned things from Tully, 100%.
But I don't know. To me, I don't think he added anything to any of the people that he was with. I guess Sean Spears got a little bit of a bump.
But also, Sean Spears, I just didn't understand what they... Like, it felt like they were going to push Sean Spears 6 different times, and then it never happened.
Well, you know, here's the thing, is that he's not that good. So now he's going to get murdered by Wardlow.
Don't super kick Stan like that.
He's going
to do that to him.
He's going to get fucking murdered by Wardlow, and then he's just going to fuck off with MJF.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong. Tully Blanchard, what did you think reviewing the career of Tully?
It's like I said earlier, great, great, great seller. I enjoyed his selling more than anything in this podcast, not named Terry Funk. It's just, it's incredible. It was incredible. My thing with Tully is, it's like I said earlier, he's just not world championship material. I really don't think he is, but that's okay because he was incredible to have in a mid card when he was a singles guy, because you know you were going to get great heel heat,
yes,
great selling, great wrestling. And you put him together with Arn Anderson, that might be the best team of all time. If not all time, they're a top 5 tag team.
I think, looking ever so briefly at the Brainbusters, we've covered Arn before. We've seen them in a couple other matches. I say this every time we talk about Brainbusters. You see what the Brainbusters did in wrestling today.
Yeah.
What, like, just the idea of solid teamwork, like the slightly smaller guy, the slightly more power guy. But you have, you know, the same system. You're always working over. You're playing the ropes. You know all the dirty tactics. You use them all to your advantage. Tully and Arn were the two guys in the 80s who were just that fucking good at being technical and doing that. You know what I mean?
Now, admittedly, they were just basically ripping what the Andersons were doing for a long time.
Yeah, Tully just came in for Ole.
Yeah. When Ole fucked off to retirement, Tully came in.
Tully just slid right in there.
And it worked.
And it worked. And then I think you're right in terms of the mid-card just style. Like, Tully just had style.
Yeah.
Like, and the thing is, as the heel, you never want to overshine, right? We talk about this when people change from babyface to heel. They change the moveset a little bit. Maybe they dull it down a little bit. Tully had a good moveset. He could get things done. And he could make everybody else, like Ricky Steamboat in a loss, look like $1 million. I mean, hey, physically, he's also jacked as shit.
Guess what? He had a rope-assisted suplex.
Apparently. Like, and I think, you know, he's a great, you need those great partners, those dancing partners for these baby faces, right? The Ricky Steamboats, the Magnum TAs, all these other guys. Plus, anybody who'll go in the ring with Terry Funk, you got my props.
Oh, absolutely.
That man's nuts.
I will say, though, if I could have a match... If I were to be like, Evan, I'm going to train to be a wrestler and I want one match, it's Terry Funk.
It's Terry
Funk. I want my one match with Terry Funk.
Call him out right now. Terry Funk.
I think here's the thing, Evan. Right now, if you could train as a wrestler for a year, let's give you a year to get to physically fit, all that stuff. You have 15 minutes.
Okay.
In the ring, anybody in any promotion, period. Who?
Now, are you trying to pick somebody who you think is going to carry you to a good match? Or are you picking like a moment?
It's quite literally whatever the hell you want. They just have to be able to have a match with you now. So, like, not dead.
There's part of me that thinks in kayfabe, you pick somebody smaller than you or like the same size as you so you could win.
I'm picking fucking Terry Funk. I don't give a shit.
Marco Stunt. If I want exposure, I'm picking like somebody on in WWE, like a big.
You have your own fucking criteria. Your match could be on at fucking WrestleMania for all I care. I want Terry Funk, and I want him at a fucking CZW show, or I guess nowadays it would be fucking GCW.
Give me Matt Cardona, and I'll be the king of GCW now. Our podcast will be the one that people talk about.
Yeah. Fuck that internet guy. It's me. I'm the new internet guy.
I'm the internet guy. Look at me. I'm the internet captain now. That wraps up this week's episode. I'm going to say an eclectic journey through the
career. This is a Pantheon episode right
here. This is up there. This is 100% up there. Javier, where can people find you on social media?
I'm on the good old Twitter machine at JMelloSports. I cannot provide more as much entertainment on the timeline as I can on this podcast. But follow me anyways.
Yeah, follow me anyways. Follow me on Twitter at @7gomes, @itsevangomes. Follow the podcast at Crossbody of Work. Follow my other podcast at Pop Capsule Pod. Why not? Fuck it.
Great podcast.
Plugs on plugs on plugs. Javier, any final words for the people? Oh, wait, we didn't spoil. We got to spoil who we're doing next week. We're going back to Canada, baby.
Oh, say, can you see?
Wrong music. It is Jacques Rougeau, a.k.a. the Mountie. We're talking Mountie.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited.
I have no fucking idea what to expect.
Hey, hey. The Mountie always gets his man.
So I've heard. Javier, any final words for the people?
Oh, man. This week has been a fucking roller coaster of emotions, of a lot of things. And you know what? You know what I'm going to do, Evan?
What you going to do?
I'm going to go make myself my makeshift chalupas that I told you about. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to watch Moon Knight.
Me too.
You know why? You know why, Evan?
Why?
Because that's what I want to do. This week's episode, do something that you want to do.
I like
Take some time for yourself. Do something you want. Not something you need to do. Not something that someone else wants to do with you. You, for you, do something you want.
I like that. I like that. I'm going to go make myself not a chalupa. Probably a PB&J. I crave one right now. I'm going to make a PB&J and go watch Moon Knight as well. We'll tell you next week what we thought about the first episode of Moon Knight, but we'll also be back talking about Jacques Rougeau, Canada. We'll see you then.